He walked 4 blocks west before taking a cab north on Lexington Avenue. He left it 3 blocks away from Swarton. He entered the sanitarium through the basement door, off the back areaway, showing his pass to the Soviet Army corporal in overalls who had taken him under the throat with the left forearm without speaking, and held until Raymond tapped his third finger twice, then showed the pass. When Raymond got to his room, the American operator was waiting for him. "Still up?" Raymond said conversationally. "It's almost 4:30. "I wanted to make sure you were all right," the operator said. "Good night, Raymond. I'll send the nurses in to rig you up again."
"Do I have to have those casts put on again?"
"Those casts must stay on until you are discharged. How do you know who'll show up here as a visitor now that Mr. Gaines is dead?" The operator left the room. The nurses had Raymond undressed and bandaged in no time at all. Raymond, as it turned out, did have 2 more visitors before he left the hospital. Joe Downey, the managing editor of the Daily Press, stopped by after Mr. Gaines' funeral and offered Raymond the job of writing the column, which meant a $200-a-week raise in pay and a net saving of $300 a week to the paper, because, naturally, they didn't figure to start Raymond at the figure Mr. Gaines had finished at, and Mr. Gaines had been political columnist for the paper for 26 years. They also offered Raymond 50% of the syndication money, a net increase of 100% to the paper, because under the prior arrangement, Mr. Gaines had kept it all, excepting the sales and distribution and promotion percentage. To the paper's owners, Mr. Downey allowed that Raymond was new and had such an unpleasant personality that it was better than 5-1 that no one would ever get around to telling him that he rated all the syndication money. It was fair. The reports from the bureau chiefs made up most of the columns, and the paper, not Raymond, had to pay the bureau chiefs. Besides, one half of the syndication money came to $506 per week, which lifted Raymond's take-home pay by $706 per week. Mr. Downey estimated this as being a bargain because the paper would have the only Medal of Honor columnist in the business, which certainly should open the doors to information at the Pentagon. And he had that crazy stepfather who could scare people into talking to Raymond, and that mother who could get him in anywhere, even to share a double bed with the president if he felt like it. And he had had 5 solid years of learning his job from Holborn Gaines. $706 a week is a nice raise for a young fellow, particularly if he likes money. Actually, the increased income took the edge off the promotion for Raymond. But the way he would handle it, he figured the money would be the bank's problem, not his. Raymond was distraught over the murder. He had a great regard for the old man, and a fondness that was unusual inasmuch as he felt fondness for only 2 other people in the world, Marco and Josie. And Josie should not be included in the category because the feeling for her was vastly different again. He just could not get it through his head that anyone would want to murder Mr. Gaines. He had been a kind and gentle and helpless old man, and how could anyone do such a thing? Mr. Downey expressed the police opinion that it must have been some mentally unstable political crank. "Holly was one of the oldest friends I had left," Mr. Downey said sadly, mourning for himself. "Is the paper going to post a reward?" Mr. Downey rubbed his chin.
I guess we should at that. We certainly should. Can charge it to promotion if we ever have to pay it."
"I want to pledge $5,000 of that reward," Raymond said hotly.
"You don't need to do that, Raymond."
"Well, I want to, goddammit."
"Well, okay. You pledge 5 and we'll pledge 10. Although the board'll have to okay it, of course. And I'll call Center Street as soon as I get back to the office so they can send out paper on it.
By God, we'll pay for a general alarm, too. The dirty bastard."
Downey was doubly upset because he hated to spend the paper's money, and he knew damned well that Holly Gaines, wherever he was, wouldn't approve of a goddamn Boy Scout grandstand play like that. But what the hell? There were certain things you pretended you had to do. Marco came in to see Raymond the same afternoon.
"Jesus, you look like hell," Raymond said from under his head bandage and traction equipment.
"What happened?"
Marco looked worse than that. The old sayings are the best, and Marco looked like death warmed over.
"What do you mean, what happened?" he said. "I'm not in a hospital bed, am I?" I just mean I never saw you look so lousy.
Well, thanks.
What happened? Marco ran his hand across his face.
I can't sleep.
Can't you get some pills? Raymond said tentatively. Having a narcotics addict for a mother, he had developed an aversion to drugs. Also, it was difficult for him to understand any kind of a sleeping problem, since he himself could have fallen asleep hanging by one ankle in a high wind.
It's not so much that I can't sleep. It's more that I'd rather not sleep. I'm walking around punchy because I'm scared. I keep having the same nightmare.
Raymond, lying flat on his back, made the flicking gesture with his right hand. Is it a nightmare about a Soviet general and a lot of Chinese and me and the guys who were on the patrol? Marco came out of the chair like a tiger. He stood over Raymond, gripping the cloth of his pajama jacket in both fists, staring down at him with wild eyes.
How did you know that? How did you know that?
His voice went up and up like eccentric stairs in front of a hilltop summer beach house.
Take your hands off me.
With that sentence, Raymond's voice fell back into his horrid, drawling manner, into his repulsive, inciting, objectionable voice that he used to keep the rest of the world on the other side of the moat surrounding the castle where he had always lain under the spell of the wicked witch. It was curdlingly unfriendly, and so actively repellent that it drove Marco backward into the chair, which was a good thing because Marco had gone into a sick yellow ivory color. His breathing was shallow, and his eyes shone with an ever so slight sheen of insanity as he had reached out to take the shape of his oppression into the muscles of his fingers and hands and punish it for what it had been doing to his dignity, which is man's own inner image of himself.
I'm sorry, Raymond.
Raymond became Marco's friend again instantly, as though there had been no lapse.
Please, tell me how you knew about my nightmare, Raymond.
Well, you see, I didn't really. I mean, it's just that Melvin, you know, Al Melvin, the corporal on the patrol, he wrote me a long letter about a week ago. I was naturally surprised to hear from him because, well, as you know, I was never much one for fraternizing. But he said in the letter that I was the only one he knew how to reach. He sent the letter to Johnny because everybody certainly knows how to reach him, because he had to tell somebody in the patrol about this nightmare, or he was afraid he would lose his mind. And
please, tell me about the nightmare, Raymond.
Well, he dreams that the patrol is all sitting together. He says he dreams about a lot of Soviet officers and some Chinese brass, and us being on the patrol. What is such a nightmare about that?
Where's the letter? Do you have the letter?
Well, no. I mean, I never keep letters.
Is that all he wrote? Is that all about the nightmare?
Yeah.
It just stops right there?
I guess so.
Man.
Is it like your nightmare?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, mine is a lot like that. You guys ought to get together.
Right away. You don't know what this means to me. I just can't explain to you what this means to me, Raymond.
Well, you can't see him right away, though, Ben. He lives in Wainwright, Alaska.
Alaska? Alaska?
Yes.
Jesus, Wainwright, Alaska. You have to be kidding.
No. I wish I was, Ben. I'm not. But so what? What's the difference?
What's the difference? I told you I can't sleep. You told me I look like hell. Well, I feel like hell. And I'm shaking all to pieces, and I think sometimes I should kill myself because I'm afraid of going insane. And then you tell me, like you were talking about the weather, that another man who was on the patrol is having the same delusions that I was afraid were driving me crazy, and you tell me he lives in some place called Wainwright, Alaska, where I can't sit down and talk to him and find out if he's cracking up like I am and how we can help each other, and you say, what's the difference?
Marco began to laugh hysterically. Then he put his face forward into his large hands and wept into them, squeezing tightly at his cheekbones, his heavy shoulders moving grotesquely and causing the four rows of his decorations to jump up and down. He made such tearing sounds that the two Soviet Army nurses on the floor came running in. After 6 or 7 minutes of Marco's reckless, unrelieved, and shocking sobbing, at which Raymond stared helplessly, they hit him with the hypo to calm him down and get him the hell out of there. All in all, Raymond had had a most ironic hospital stay, what with a visit from the wife of America's most gallant and noisy anti-communist to a hospital operated by the Soviet secret police,
what with a U.S. Army intelligence officer breaking down and embarrassing the staff of the same place, what with contributing $5,000 to a reward for his own capture, and what with learning that two grown men were perfectly capable of behaving like children over a perfectly harmless, if repetitious, dream.